You're listening to The Leonard Lopez Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Summer's bounty is on full display these days in our farmers markets, and especially dazzling are the many varieties of tomatoes. Well, what to do with them all? Well, that's why we've invited the resourceful and talented Melissa Clark back to our show to address all things tomatoes. Melissa's column, A Good Appetite, appears regularly in the Wednesday dining section of the New York Times, and her latest cookbook is Cook This Now from Hyperion. And Melissa, it's always great to have you on our show.
Great to be back. Thank you.
We'll also be taking listener calls questions, suggestions, whatever. About what to do with tomatoes. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. I understand that your devotion to tomatoes goes way back to the third grade.
Oh, well, I mean, one of the first times I ever thought about eating a tomato sandwich was when I read Harriet the Spy. Do you remember Harriet the Spy? She was a little girl who was a spy. And, of course, you know, in her own making and on the Upper East Side. And she, every day for lunch, she would only eat tomato sandwiches on white bread. Now, when I was a kid, I thought that was just the height of exotic, gourmet food. God, a tomato sandwich on white bread. We never had that in my house. But now I still love a tomato sandwich. I do it a little differently. I don't want to have soft white bread. I like to have crunchy toast, because crunchy toast with some kind of butter or olive oil rubbed with a little bit of garlic, and then you have the gushy, juicy, luscious tomato on top. You have that textural contrast. Plus, it takes a while before the toast gets soggy. And then it also is just the perfect – it's like this perfect little way to get the tomato to your mouth, you know, without it leaking all over the place. So it really – you need the crunch and then that little bit of fat, and of course good sea salt on top to bring out the tomato flavor.
Put anything else on, like mozzarella, basil, or anything like that?
Mayonnaise? I've put everything you can possibly think of on a tomato sandwich at one point. I mean, the tomato sandwich is just this wonderful vehicle for creativity. You start with the bread, and then you have the tomato, and you have the salt. Those three things are non-negotiable for a tomato sandwich. Everything else is negotiable. I've used butter. I've used mayonnaise. I've used... I've actually once I had some really, really good homemade rendered lard I had rendered it with some thyme in it. So it was really fragrant. That was absolutely delicious with the tomatoes. I mean, cheese is great. Ricotta cheese. Sometimes I'll use avocado as the fat, which you can just take the hot toast. You smash the avocado on top of it, and it's just this rich vegetable butter. And then I'll put the tomatoes on that. In fact, today, you know what I had for breakfast before I came here? I was getting in the mood. I did the toast. I did almost like a pan con tomate, which is a Spanish a dish that you take the tomato and you don't just slice the tomato and put it on the bread. You take your toast, you rub it with garlic, olive oil, and then you crush the tomato on it. You actually squeeze out its guts, and then you put the avocado on top. And I used a little bit of smoked paprika right over that just to add a spice and a smokiness. And it was about the best breakfast I've had since yesterday when I had another tomato sandwich.
So do you try to do a different one every day or every time?
I just do what's at hand. I don't actually think about doing it differently. I don't think I've ever replicated it, though. I think it's one of those arts that is, you know, at the moment.
For years, I was told that avocados were unhealthy because they were just so full of cholesterol. Now, suddenly, I've read that avocado may be the healthiest of all fruits.
Yes. And what's so great about an avocado is, of course, you know, you feel so virtuous eating it because it is so good for you. It really has
it
tastes great. It has the most healthy fats, and it's great with tomato. But I would love to know what listeners out there are doing with their tomato sandwiches, because, you know, I'm always open to ideas. How do you do your tomato sandwich? Mayonnaise? A little bacon?
No. Well, I like BLTs. But I usually try to put a little mozzarella on and some basil with olive oil and sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
That classic thing, whether it's with bread or without bread.
You know,
that's just a perfect salad.
That's actually, you know, you could use the mozzarella instead of bread. A big slice of mozzarella right from the center of the ball, put this slice of tomato on top, and that works really well as a little vehicle to the mouth.
But you need certain kinds of tomatoes for different kinds of things.
You can't
use cherry tomatoes or grape tomatoes for this kind of thing, as well as if you just have a larger tomato that you can slice.
Oh, I have a trick with cherry tomatoes. Because sometimes you just have cherry tomatoes, you don't have a nice big round tomato. Take your cherry tomatoes, have them, and then make sure to put them flat side, cut side down on the toast. Otherwise, they will fall right off.
Of course.
So if you do that, you're good, and that'll work. So that's, that can be for your next. Today I had three colors of heirloom cherry tomatoes. I had red ones, green ones, and yellow ones, and it was just so pretty.
And what are your thoughts about heirlooms? Do you think they actually taste better, or would you support them simply because we're getting away from just having standardized vegetables? Well, tomatoes, I shouldn't say vegetables. It's a fruit.
It is a fruit. You know, tomatoes are botanically a fruit, but legally they are, in terms of commerce, they are a vegetable, which I think is interesting. I don't exactly know what the difference between a fruit and a vegetable in commerce and legalese is, but they're so they are.
Whatever it means, it means that the customer is screwed a bit.
I'm sure. But they are, you know, botanically they're a fruit and they taste like a fruit. They taste sweet. They taste so juicy. And obviously all those seeds in the center is what makes them a fruit. About the heirlooms, what's, you know, when heirlooms, I remember the first heirloom tomato I'd ever tasted, and it was such a revelation because it was so unlike those terrible unripe tomatoes that I was used to in the supermarket. But there are terrible heirlooms out there, too. I mean, right, you can get any tomato. I think storage is a big problem. If you go to a supermarket and you see heirlooms in the refrigerator case, or you see heirlooms and you get them home and they're kind of mealy, chances are they've been refrigerated. It doesn't matter that they're heirlooms. Better to get just an honest tomato that's ripe, that's never seen the fridge.
When I saw heirloom tomatoes at farmers markets before the season, I assumed that they had been grown in the greenhouse and they didn't have the same kind of rich flavor that I'm used to when they are in season as they are right now.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't think any greenhouse tomato, I don't think they really ever reach that same peak of ripeness. I don't think they get that. You don't get the terroir. You don't get the soil. You don't get all those other factors that make up the great flavor of a tomato. But a great heirloom, nothing beats a great heirloom.
Do you think this is a good year for tomatoes because of the weird weather we've been having?
You know,
a lot of rain and then hot weather?
I've been thinking about it. We haven't had a really great tomato season in a couple of years. We had the blossom end rot problem, remember, a few years ago, where we lost all our tomatoes to this terrible disease called blossom end rot.
To have disappeared. At least it's not affecting my tomatoes.
I haven't seen it. People haven't been talking about it. If you grow tomatoes and you've had blossom end rot, let us know. We can know what's coming. But what I've noticed is that the tomatoes I've got from the farmer's market just in the last week or two, I think they're really coming, have been absolutely delicious. I think this is going to be a fine tomato season.
Do you grow your own? Do you have a backyard?
I used to grow my own, but they took up too much real estate. I never got a good enough yield. There was a squirrel problem that you and I were talking about.
Yes.
New York City squirrels are very aggressive, and they even like green tomatoes. So I gave it up, and I grow a lot more lemon verbena now, and I just buy my tomatoes.
Well, another problem with tomatoes is if you don't have real space, you can't grow them on your windowsill. They just grow too big.
Yes. Well, right. And they also need a lot of sun, and they do need good soil. I mean, you need to compost them in order to get good flavor. Otherwise, they just don't taste as good as the ones that you can buy.
Listeners have been writing in and calling. Kim on Twitter shared her recipe for a tomato sandwich: tomato, avocado on crusty bread, and hemp seeds, salt, pepper, and a drop of olive oil.
Hemp seed. Now that is, I've never had a hemp seed knowingly that I know. I don't think I've had a hemp seed. I wonder what they taste like.
I'm not going to go into the whole thing about hemp because
we all know about hemp. But yes. I was just wondering, you know, in terms of my tomato sandwich, I guess it's probably going to add a little earthiness. Interesting. Thank you for that.
And then Brona on Twitter suggests adding fish sauce instead of salt to your tomato sandwiches because it adds saltiness and umami.
Umami. That's a great idea. In fact, I think I sent you guys a recipe for a South Asian-inspired tomato salad that is on your website right now. And it is tomatoes seasoned with fish sauce. And it's absolutely a great combination because, yes, you get the salt, you get the umami. And I just love anything with, anchovies, fish sauce. I love that pungent flavor. And it also has garlic.
And then you have light brown sugar in that recipe.
I do, right, and lime juice just to add, to make it a little bit sweet, a little bit tart. It balances out the flavors. It's an unusual take on your traditional tomato salad, but it's very fresh and very light.
What about the different kinds of tomatoes? For example, if you're making a tomato sauce, do you try to get the Italian-style plum tomatoes for that, or does it really matter?
Plum tomatoes are great because they're so fleshy. You know, they don't have a lot of seeds, so you really get you don't have to cook them quite as long to really get a concentration of flavor. They have that built into their flesh, which is wonderful. But this said, if you can't find good plum tomatoes, better to use a really good, really ripe, regular Jersey tomato than mediocre plum tomatoes. What you want for a sauce and what you want for any time you're using tomatoes is to find the ones with the best flavor. So even if your recipe says, oh, you know, 6 pounds of plum tomatoes, don't stress it. Just get 6 pounds of amazing tomatoes. And then if you're doing a sauce, though, it is important to take the seeds out, I think, because – and the seeds are great. You can use the seeds. You can actually – remember tomato water? Remember that from the 80s? That's the lovely tomato jelly around the seeds. It has an incredible amount of flavor. I like to – I strain it, and then I use it in, I use it in Bloody Marys. I use it in salad dressings. Sometimes I just actually drink it because it tastes
so
good.
Now, why do you take the seeds out? Don't they kind of dissolve if you're cooking the sauce?
You could do that, but with a plum tomato, it's fine because you don't have a lot of liquid. But with a big, really juicy Jersey tomato, all that tomato jelly around the seeds slows down the cooking, and then you risk overcooking the sauce. So I like to apply as little heat as possible to get the right consistency. And so if you leave that jelly, you need to cook it a little bit longer.
And what about skinning them? Do you skin them?
I do not skin. You can skin. People skin. I just pass it through a very coarse. Actually, use one of those. Oh gosh, what are those things called?
It's a cone shaped thing,
yes,
that has a grinding.
Yes, I use one of those things. Listeners, please tell me what that is called.
Yeah, give us a call. Our number 212-433-9692.
Tell us how you do your tomato sauce. You know, what I meant to do last year was to can a bunch of.
Oh,
sauce.
It's called a ricer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Phew, I suddenly remembered.
Much better. Call us anyway and talk to us about tomato sauce. We'd love to hear from you. Because I actually need some advice. Have you ever done a big, huge, sort of laid in a supply of tomato sauce for the winter? Because I've only done a few jars here and there. I've been very I've been slow to really pick up the whole canning craze and really lay in a supply of canned tomatoes. And I want to do it this year. So I'm looking for...
I've never done that.
Yeah.
When winter comes, I wind up buying Marzano's in the can.
Yes, which are great too. I mean, there is something to be said for leaving it to the experts in Italy.
Now, what about doing an uncooked tomato sauce? You ever do that?
Oh, it's one of my favorite things in the whole world. Marinate. So I take my tomatoes, my ripe tomatoes. Sometimes I'll take the seeds out, but most of the time I won't. I'll just leave them in. I'll chop them up, throw them into a bowl. And here's the key part for that is letting it sit with some salt, some pepper, and some raw garlic, but really just letting it sit for a good 15, 20 minutes. I'll put that, and then some chopped basil, of course. And then I put the olive oil in later. I actually let the flavors come together with the salt and the garlic and the basil first. Then I'll add the olive oil and I'll add the hot pasta. And that is just one of the most amazing rewards
of summer. Because it tastes so fresh.
It tastes so fresh. And you just don't get that flavor any other time of the year. And it's beautiful if you use a bunch of different colored heirlooms.
We're still getting a lot of suggestions for tomato sandwiches.
Oh, good.
Brett on Facebook shared this one with basil, sliced feta cheese,
and
basil pesto spread on a roll.
That sounds delicious. Feta is really good with tomatoes. And you don't hear, you know, except for a Greek salad, it doesn't come up all that often. But because it's so salty, you know, you always hear about either mozzarella with tomatoes because it's so creamy, or you hear Parmesan because it's so pungent. But really, feta has both creaminess and pungency. So it's a wonderful, wonderful cheese. Also, ricotta salata. Same combination of pungency, or I guess saltiness really more than pungency, and then this lovely creamy texture.
My guest is Melissa Clark, who, among other things, writes a weekly column for the New York Times dining section every Wednesday called A Good Appetite. And her latest cookbook, her, what did we say, 38th, 93rd?
Somewhere in the 30s there.
Is Cook This Now. It's published by Hyperion. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or on Twitter, where what is it called again? Our handle.
Yeah, you and I handle. Today.
Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We'll be right back. We're back with Melissa Clark, who has written over 30-something cookbooks, the most recent Cook This Now, published by Hyperion. She's also responsible for blogs and for the weekly food column called A Good Appetite in the New York Times dining section every Wednesday. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we're going to try to get to as many listeners as we can. We're talking about tomatoes. And our first caller is Bob from Park Slope. Hi, Bob.
Hi, this is Bob, and I have a couple of things I'd like to ask you about.
Okay, could you do it quickly? A lot of people on the line.
Very quickly. First of all, you know, I really miss the tomato season where what we used to call Jersey tomatoes would come in, very large, delicious beefsteaks, high acidity, and thick skin. And now they have something they call Jersey tomato, but it really isn't. It's not a beefsteak, really, on the level that they used to be. They used to be in the markets. And then I have a question about tomato blight, but that's the first one. What do you recommend to get a nice high acidity tomato like that?
You know, that's interesting.
Do you remember it?
That's actually really interesting because tomatoes are, especially heirlooms, they tend to be very low acid, and I actually often use a little bit of lemon juice or balsamic with them to bring that up. But I do remember when I was growing up that we never put acid in a tomato salad because the tomato had enough acid on its own. And
right.
You're right, it's very hard to find those varieties. Have you ever seen a tomato called a Ramapo?
I have not seen it.
That might be as close as you can come. It's one of those things. It is actually something you have to get at the farmer's market, but they have really nice acidity. Plum tomatoes, I think, also tend to be a little bit higher acid.
Now, I wonder why the beefsteaks have almost disappeared, since they were the standard for a while. They were pretty much the only kind that you could get fresh.
You know,
for many, many years.
I think it's the heirloom craze. I feel like farmers are planting heirlooms because when you go to the farmer's market, the heirlooms cost twice as much as the regular tomatoes. So if you have a field and you're thinking, what should I plant it with? You're going to plant it with heirlooms. But I think that, you know, it's a really good point, Bob, about the high acidity. And I feel like it's all customer demand. So, you know, thank you for calling in and just, you know, reminding us about this taste that we like.
And we probably should save the question about blight when we have Gerard Lordahl, who is a horticulturist who visits our show regularly.
I don't know anything about blight.
I was trying to spare you that.
Thank you.
Okay, next is John from Paramus. Hi, you're on the air.
That's a great show. I like a tomato with mozzarella and basil and avocado and that fresh Italian, that Italian tuna fish that you have buy in a jar, you know, the overpriced stuff.
Yes.
I like that on a sandwich. Sometimes I'll not even have the bread. I'll just use the mozzarella as a sandwich type of thing.
Now, Julia Child used to say the only kind of tuna fish you should ever buy jarred or canned is the Italian in olive oil.
Yes.
She was definitely opposed to the fresh spring water craze.
By the way, the Spanish stuff in olive oil, I think, is just as good as the Italian stuff in olive oil, but it's the olive oil that's key. I think you're absolutely... That sandwich, by the way, sounds heavenly, because I have done something similar, but I've never actually combined the tuna and the mozzarella, and that's the genius, because I'll bet that texture is just fabulous. So thank you for calling in about that. And I absolutely... if you can't get tuna in olive oil... I mean, the tuna, and you can only get the spring water kind, drain it and put good olive oil on top of it. It needs the fat. It really does. Even though tuna is a fatty fish, it still needs even more to really be at its best.
Flora from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I'm from southern France, and the one important thing that we had every day during the summer going to the beach was pain beignet.
Ah, yes.
And so I feel that it has to be in your list. A pain beignet is you take some French bread, you cut it in two, you spread with, of course, wonderful olive oil and vinegar, and then you put the tomato slice in between and you squeeze it so it just permeates the whole bread. And then you add onions, and you can add a little bit of hard-boiled eggs and anchovies and olives and basil, and actually let it cool. It's better when it's a little cool. And you eat it, and it's divine, especially on the Mediterranean.
You, Thank you for reminding me about that, because that is one of my favorite sandwiches. And I, when I was a little girl, we would always go to the beach in the south of France. I was really lucky. My parents were psychiatrists, so every August they had the whole month off, and they took us to.
I grew up there.
So August was, we'd sit on the beach with pan bagna, yeah. And it was the sand too. You have to have a little bit of sand in there.
Oh, okay, just, I forgot about that.
But it's just so, but it's such a good memory. And I actually do have a recipe for a pan bagna. I think you can find it on, I'll give it to you guys.
You mean it's a different one from mine?
It's the same, except I use a little tuna too. Anchovies and tuna.
I say the tuna. I forgot to say the tuna.
Yeah, otherwise it's the same recipe. It's we put cucumber also for a little crunch.
Yes, cucumber too. You can do whatever. But the most important thing is that you bathe it with olive oil and vinegar and the cut tomatoes and press them together and add the onions, and it's great.
How do you press it? When I was a little girl, my parents had my sister and I sit on them. We'd sit on these sandwiches.
The bread, the French bread in two, la mie, I don't even know how you say in English, I'm just forgetting the word, and the soft part of the bread.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And
oh, the crumb.
You bathe the inside with olive oil, of course, virgin olive oil, and red vinegar. And then you put the tomatoes, the very beautiful red tomatoes, sliced. And actually, you do put the onions, too, and then you press it together. You squeeze it.
You squeeze it with your hands. You use your hands.
With your hands. And that's where maybe the sand comes in.
Thank you so much for calling us. And I understand something about you that I didn't before. Both your parents were psychotherapists?
Yes, that explains a lot. They still are. They still are in Brooklyn. It explains everything, doesn't it?
Allie, hi, you're on the air. Allie from NIAC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My favorite way to eat an heirloom tomato in the summer is a gluten-free version of a BLT, where I take a beautiful big romaine leaf, crunchy leaf, and I put some really nice mayo in there, sliced avocado, uncured thick-cut bacon, and beautiful fresh heirloom tomatoes, sprinkle it with sea salt and pepper, and roll it up, and eat it like a wrap.
What a great idea. That is such a great idea. That I love using lettuce, all kinds of, spicy meats, and you can use that as a little wrap, but I just never would think of it for BLT. Brilliant.
Thank you so much. We have a lot of people writing in. Phoebe from Bushwick wonders if you have an opinion on Kamados, the brown tomatoes. She says she finds them super flavorful, but tends to avoid vegetables that come prepackaged.
Yeah, no, they're pretty, when you're desperate for a tomato and it's not quite tomato season, I've had them and they're okay. Texture-wise, though, they tend to be on the mealy side, and I think that's storage. I think they're generally put in the fridge for transport. So they're not perfect, but they will do you when you have no other tomatoes. They'll just, if you need a tomato in, say, March, they're okay.
Melissa Clark has a weekly column in the New York Times dining section called A Good Appetite. You're listening to the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC, WNYC.org. I am Leonard Lopate. Sam writes on our show page, sliced Jersey tomato with olive paste, green or black, on toast, toasted rye. Mm-hmm. Brooke from Brooklyn shared this tomato salad recipe. Last night, we made a tomato salad with harissa-infused olive oil, shallots, parsley, and a bit of lemon, and, of course, salt.
I love the harissa-infused olive oil idea because that also adds a little spice. It adds a little bit of smokiness. I had something similar when I put smoked paprika on my sandwich today, but the harissa has more kick. It's a great idea.
Tom on the Upper West Side shared this gazpacho recipe. Mm. Use any flavorful tomato plus the rest of the fresh stuff, cukes, onion, cilantro. I'm having mine with equal parts watermelon and tomato and bites of avocado. It's the best. To dress it up now and then, add some sweet vermouth, he says.
Oh, interesting. Nice idea, sweet vermouth.
Now, we had a listener who wrote in with some canning suggestions and then hung up. I was just going to go to that caller because we were talking earlier
about canning tomato sauce.
What to do with tomato sauces. Amy on Facebook shared this sandwich recipe. Slice thick with a hunk of fresh mozzarella, salt, pepper, and spritz with white truffle oil.
Ooh.
And she says she does it almost daily.
Wow. That's a lot of truffle oil.
Yeah. Caller says that the sieve isn't called a ricer. It's called a chinois.
You know, I'm actually not thinking of a sieve. I'm thinking of the ricer, but the one where you turn it.
Well, that's called a ricer. It's a cone-shaped thing.
It's flat at the bottom. No, okay. I'm thinking of something else. I'll remember it at 2 in the morning. I'll send you I'll tweet it.
A food mill.
A food mill. That's it. Yes, I passed it through a food mill. That's exactly it. And you can change the discs on it, so you can have it very fine or very coarse. And I like to use the very coarse one, which just keeps out the skin, but it doesn't make the puree too fine. I like little chunks of tomato in my tomato sauce.
Claire in Bed-Stuy shared this advice on canning on our show page. Instead of canning and putting up sauce in the summer because slaving over a hot stove in summer is something to avoid, I blanch and peel them and freeze them in one-pound bags.
Oh.
1 liter bags, I guess it is. And then use one bag at a time all winter for sauces, soups, tahines, vegetable ragu, and lasagna.
That's a nice idea, actually, and then you don't have to worry about canning. The thing is, you do need a really big freezer for that, or at least enough of freezer space. Do you know what they do at the farmer's market? The one in wherever Ray Bradley is, one of the farmers at my local market at Granary Plaza, and he's also at Union Square, he, in the middle of the winter, he'll take his tomatoes in the summer. He must have a deep freeze on his farm. He'll freeze them. In the middle of the winter, every once in a while, he'll come with a giant thing of frozen tomatoes. And those are just about the best thing, because there you are in winter, and you take it home, and you make it into a really quick sauce, and it's just a little taste of summer. It's very special.
We have a call from Mike from Bayhead, New Jersey. Mike, you have an unorthodox tomato sandwich.
I didn't think that it was unorthodox, but apparently, because I haven't heard it mentioned, one of the staves of life is peanut butter. So in the summer, to get through the summer, I have peanut butter, tomatoes of any variety I can get, and a little mayonnaise, and I'm a happy camper.
Wow. Okay. I've never, ever tried that. That's really good. I mean, I have to say, it doesn't immediately sound appealing, but it might just be my own naivete.
You have to like peanut butter.
Tomato jellies, and maybe peanut butter with tomato jelly would be interesting.
But he's talking about a savory. This is a very savory sandwich because you're using mayonnaise as well, right?
Yes. That's
mayonnaise and peanut butter.
Well, okay. Think of it this way.
I don't think Jews are allowed to do that.
You know, a peanut sauce, okay? You have a very savory peanut sauce. So if you kind of think of it in that, you know, in that frame of mind, I'm going to try this. I'm going to absolutely try this. Thanks for the idea. I mean, I definitely would not have thought of it on my own.
Crunchy peanut butter, though.
Crunchy peanut butter. I can get that. I can get crunchy peanut butter. I've got mayonnaise in the fridge. I've got my tomatoes. I'm going to have to go. What else do you put on it? Mayonnaise? Is that it? Just those three things?
Yep. That's all that I use.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Now I'm going to wait for my stomach to settle. Tom from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a wonderful tomato sauce, which we invented this year. I'm sure it exists somewhere in Italy, but ours came to us fully grown. And it goes like this. Slice as thinly as possible garlic and olive oil and a little butter. And one package of anchovies, mm-hmm. and especially if you can get the very good kind, mm-hmm. and if you can get the spicy kind, that's good. Also, you can add red pepper,
mm-hmm.
and cook it very, very under very low flame for about half an hour, 45 minutes.
Wow, that long, okay.
Yes, pounding it so that it becomes a paste,
mm-hmm.
almost a paste. And then you add either canned tomatoes, which you've crushed the liquid out of, or fresh tomatoes that you've scooped the way you've described them,
mm-hmm.
and some tomato paste, and cook that for another half an hour with a little red wine till it all cooks down into a beautiful sauce. It is the most amazing sauce for spaghetti or linguine. Absolutely magnificent.
You know, you're speaking my language with that whole entire jar of anchovies. That's...
Yeah, now what is it about anchovies? This is the second time it's come up in this discussion. Do anchovies and tomatoes go well together?
They really do, because tomatoes are just so sweet and so juicy. And anchovies, again, it's not just the umami and the salt, but it's the umami, the salt. And then they have, you know, just that, there's just something about... It's a pungency, too. So you've got umami, you've got this pungency, you've got the salt, you've got the sweetness of the tomato. I use anchovies a lot in my recipes. And one reader wrote into the Times, had this cucumber soup, this cucumber buttermilk soup, and I added anchovies to it. And she said, I love Melissa Clark's recipes, but sometimes I wonder what would happen to her if she didn't have any anchovies. And I think, well, I always have anchovies. I'm a jar ahead. I always have an extra jar in the pantry. So, and then when I move the pantry jar to the fridge, I buy another one for the pantry, so I will never run out of anchovies.
Now, where do you think the word umami came from? Is that somebody made that sauce that this guy just described, and the kid said, umami, that's good?
It would be the ultimate compliment. If Dahlia, my daughter, ever said that to me after eating an anchovy sauce, I would be complete as a person, I think.
Catherine from Massapequa, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my mom's parents were born in Greece. And she gave us the most fabulous treat in the summer, which I still use for fancy picnics. She would take crab meat, lump crab meat, the best, of course, mm-hmm. and dress it with really good olive oil, lemon juice, fresh cracked pepper, and a little oregano, and then hollow out large cherry tomatoes and stuff them with the crab meat. Oh, my goodness, it's so delicious.
Oh, that sounds great. Oh, that sounds like a perfect thing, just the perfect little hors d'oeuvre. Mm.
I could just see having it. It's the perfect hors d'oeuvre, and people get so excited when it shows up at a party.
I'll bet they do, and keeping it so simple like that, just the crab meat and the olive oil and the tomato, that's great.
We don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to ask Antonio's question. He wrote it into our show page. Is tomato paste hard to make?
I have never made it. But I know there are a lot of recipes for it. I'm sure you can find them online. I think the thing about tomato paste is cooking it long enough so that it really condenses without burning it. I think you probably at the end have to stand over it and watch it. But I have not done it. I mean, maybe there's a way to do it in a double boiler that's more forgiving. I always buy tomato paste, but it is something worth making, I think, because if obviously anything like that you make homemade is going to be better. I do make my own ketchup. It's something I do.
I have started making my own ketchup and mustard.
Yes.
And they are just so much better.
And so I imagine homemade tomato paste.
Well, I would think the tomato paste is just a matter of patience because you got to wait for it to really boil down into something so incredibly thick.
But you can control the salt, too, which is important there.
If you didn't get a chance to share your tomato sandwich recipe on the air, well, we invite you to write into our show page at WNYC.org so this discussion can continue. You can also share it on Facebook and Twitter. And do people write in recipes to you, Melissa, at the Times?
They do. I'm also on Twitter. You can follow me. My handle is at Good Appetite. That's like my column. And if you have, I think a tomato sandwich in a tweet is probably the perfect thing, you know, just because you can probably fit it in 140 characters. So any of you, please, you know, also copy me on the tweets with your tomato sandwich ideas. I'm going to go home and eat another one right after this. One for breakfast, one for lunch.
And meanwhile, if you want to find out what Melissa is doing with anchovies every week, you can check out her column in the New York Times dining section on Wednesdays called A Good Appetite, usually on the second page of the dining section, always.
And very soon we are working on a tomato article, and right now I'm actually going to go home and make a tomato crostata, fried green tomatoes, and one more tomato dish yet to be determined.
Are there any tomato recipes in Cook This Now, your latest cookbook from Hyperion?
Yeah, we have two of them up on your website. We have we have the perfect tomato sandwich, and we have the South Asian-inspired tomato salad. I also have a great – I like to do tomato sauce with bacon. If I'm not using anchovies, I'm probably using bacon. And it has rosemary in it. And this is good for overripe tomatoes. You know, in September when they're a little bit on the soft side, this sauce is perfect for those fresh yet soft tomatoes.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks
again
for having me.